Yes, hello folks, welcome to the Global Football Show. I'm your host as always, Phil Branch, with my regular co-host, the excellent Zach Louis. Zach, have you been bodying anyone in football this weekend, mate? How was your weekend?
Have I bodied anyone in football?
Yes.
No, unfortunately I haven't yet, but looking to play soon.
If you missed last week's show, you'll find out that Zach took everyone by surprise and was bending limbs in his football on Sunday. So, getting a bit of a reputation, I can see. The butcher.
That was only because it was raining nonstop, and my cleats did not have studs in them. So I'm going and making an investment on some cleats that have studs this week. So yeah.
Oh my God! You hear excuses coming out. the American butcher. So good luck to you. Only one playing against Zach this weekend. With now he's got studs, it'll be even worse. That's the talk about this week. Minute, of course, on a more somber note, the Vinicius Jr. stuff. We've talked about this on the podcast before. We'd be remiss not to talk about it today because it does deserve coverage. And I want to get your view on what we can do to potentially stop this, to eradicate it. I want to talk to you a little bit about Bielsa going to Uruguay. Interesting appointment, and he had some very, very interesting things to say in a press conference that I endorse wholeheartedly. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about that. I want to talk to you about where Pep Guardiola falls on the pantheon of greats. I've obviously got my own views on that. It's not easy to have nuance on Twitter, so I want to elucidate that a little better. And talk to you about the Women's Champions League final coming up on June 3rd. I was doing some research for that before we came on air. I'm ashamed to say that I'm not that well versed in women's football, which I should be. I have two daughters that love the sport. They're at the bottom end, they're just starting. And seeing the growth in women's football is truly remarkable, and one of the areas that football has tremendous potential for growth in. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll start with the Vinicius Jr. stuff, Zach. I remember when we talked about the Lukaku situation on here with the Juventus Center game, where he was racially abused, and I even found some of the commentary surrounding it to be utterly bizarre. And people saying, well, you know, we shouldn't be inciting the crowd. I've still yet to understand how telling a racist to be quiet, shushing a racist, would be considered incitement. I really don't understand how that even falls under the definition of incitement. It's the bare minimum. And then here we see Vinicius wasn't just one guy, wasn't just a one-off. This was a entire stadium. Now, Zach, you can go far back. It's Pep Guardiola when Roberto Carlos was at Real Madrid. And the same thing happened, called Mono, the monkey, of course, by the Barcelona fans. Pep Guardiola was asked about this when Roberto Carlos came out and rightfully complained about it. Pep Guardiola's terse response was, he talks too much. Now, this is not to skewer Pep, but there's been a number of questionable remarks in his past about racism, even the response of Javier Tebas, the response of Valencia upper management has been utterly perplexing. You'd somehow turn to tell you what your eyes and ears didn't see didn't happen, what your eyes and ears saw didn't happen and heard. Fine if it's one or two idiots, but to get an entire stadium to come out and do something like that is really an awful indictment on Spanish society in general, that you could see such a thing today. Not the first time Vinicius Jr. has experienced this. What was your take on that when you saw it?
Yeah, I think it was absolutely despicable. It was abhorrent. And it's something that just keeps on repeating itself. You know, we've seen this with so many players, such as Carlos Vinicius, Iñaki Williams, Nico Williams, players who are just starting out. And I think that probably no player has suffered it more than Vinicius. We've seen this on so many occasions. We've seen, you know, Atletico fans hanging a toy over a bridge and just really making his life a living hell. It's just really despicable to see. And I have to say, you know, watching these events unfold, I do wonder about all of, you know, so many black players in the past, such as Mario Balotelli, who have had to go through this and who haven't had the same, you know, support system. And I just wonder how different a lot of these careers could be, because the fact is, you know, this is not just about racism. This is about protecting players' mental health. It's an enormous pain that a player like Vinicius has to go through. And I think it speaks volumes that, you know, he was pushed to the verge of tears, hearing people call him a monkey. And why wouldn't he be? And the fact is, Vinicius, you know, he's had to deal with the weight of the world, all this pressure, since he was 16. He's had to, you know, he played for one of the biggest clubs in South America, in Flamengo, and he's had to deal with a lot of pressure there, as well as at Real Madrid. But, you know, he's dealt with the criticism. He's become one of the best players in world football and, quite frankly, the face of La Liga. He's won everything there is to win with Real Madrid. He is succeeding at the biggest club in world football. And yet, you know, he's at a point where he is making these, shall we say, veiled threats that he's considering leaving Real Madrid for some other team. And I think that, you know, a lot of people will say, okay, well, if you leave Madrid, you're just letting the racists win. But the fact is, we are seeing this happen with so many different fan bases. You know, this has happened with Valencia, Girona, Atletico, Mallorca. I'm probably missing a few, but it's like, you know, normally I would be saying, you know what, this is absolutely despicable. I want Valencia to get relegated as a result of this. But the thing is that a lot of the teams that they're competing against to stay up, and I believe they may have already stayed up since they're at 40 points. I think a lot of teams that they're competing against have also done the same thing. So, yeah, it's just despicable that a 22-year-old like Vinicius has to suffer this. And, yeah, as somebody who has lived in Spain, who has lived in Madrid, I can definitely attest to the fact that there is a racism problem in Spanish society.
Why, though? What is the antecedents to this? When you look at a lot of other nations that have confronted this problem, I mean, it's widely understood there's a major social consequence for being a bigot, that overt. Why is Spain still wrestling with something so basic and primitive? Because I'll tell you something, Zach. There's an awful lot, you can tell an awful lot by people's response about the sincerity of their condemnation of racism and whether they even get the problem or not and whether they even understand what the problem is. Javier Tebas criticized Vinicius Jr. for saying he didn't turn up for two of our hearings on racism, as if somehow that would justify Vinicius Jr. being racially abused. As if, even if he had of, what would that have changed? Were the Valencia fans supposed to come? Because he didn't do anything, he's a victim here. And when I listened to, you know, some of the response from Valencia about Carlo Ancelotti being misunderstanding the language, and maybe there was a couple of people, I mean, but we're not all racists. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, what this should provoke, if you're Javier Tebas, one, is a multitude of different emotions. Just like you said, absolute empathy and heartbreak for a 22-year-old kid, because at that point, Vinicius Jr. is not a 22-year-old superstar, he's a kid on the pitch being racially abused by an entire fucking stadium in my language. And the vulnerability at that moment. And if you're black, you must feel there's no appeal to authority, no one cares. They actually privately probably support it. I imagine that's how I would feel if I was black. And yet he gets suspended and sent off in the same way that Lukaku did. It didn't even make its way into the referee's report. And I'm going, they just don't understand the problem.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I do think that Javier Tebas showed his true colors, though. He cares more about protecting the league's image.
Correct.
Than he doesn't care about stopping racism. 100%. None of these clubs care who are at the top. None of them care about protecting these players. Mm-hmm. You know, they're more concerned about doing the public relations work and putting in some bullshit hashtag. But yeah, look, I did reach out to Joris Evers, who's the chief communications officer, with a strongly worded letter, shall we say. He responded, fully agree that racism has no place in sport or anywhere in society. Also agree that we should do whatever we can to fight it. As the league, we have many initiatives and campaigns and always denounce and take the actions we can take. There's more we should do and will do, but we are also limited in terms of the sanctions we can apply as a league. So, you know, obviously just trying to save face. I appreciate the response, but frankly, actions speak louder than words, and we haven't seen enough action from La Liga. Of course, you know, this is far from a La Liga problem. My favorite league, the Portuguese league, has definitely had some issues in the past with it, and still do. But I do think that La Liga is really starting to stand out as, you know, a league that we see consistent examples of racial abuse on a weekly basis. And I think that, you know, it's telling that the same Valencia fans who racially abused Vinicius are the ones who saw their own player, a black French center back, Mukhtar Diakabi, pushed to the verge of pushed to tears, and you know, having Valencia players walk off the pitch after he was allegedly racially abused by Cadiz's Juan Cala just 2 years ago. And Diakabi is still on that team. So those Valencia fans are essentially stating that, yeah, we don't care. We're going to do what we can to abuse him, to upset him. The fact is, there's no place in the game for that. And yet, we're in 2023, and it feels like no progress has been made. Not only that, it feels like we're going backwards. Because so many of these racist fans continue to feel emboldened. There aren't anywhere near enough consequences. You know, we need to start talking about jail time. We need to start talking about stadium bans and docking these teams points, because I do think that you know, if a lot of these racist fans saw that their actions could cost them, you know, 6 or 8 points and cause them to miss out on a European spot or cause them to drop into the relegation zone, I do think that a lot of them would rethink their actions. And I think that says a lot about the fact that, yeah, these are not good people, but they are, frankly, a lot more concerned about how their team's doing than anything else. But yeah, I think it's just been really despicable. And frankly, it's made me not want to watch any La Liga match again. I really can't see myself watching any La Liga match for a while, because the same things are happening. The same racist abuse is happening. And it doesn't matter what team you play for. We're seeing players from Cadiz, from Real Madrid, from all over getting racially abused, and it's just despicable. And that comes with a lack of action. That, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons why this is continuing. And I have to say, it's just despicable to hear so many people saying, you know, well, guess what? Vinicius, he provokes people. He deserves it. Okay, look, I mean, I can't deny that there have been times where Vinicius has been, you know, shall we say, provoking, but nothing provokes racism. There is no excuse whatsoever. Vinicius, you know, yes, you know, he did do a second division's signal to the Valencia fans. That still doesn't excuse it. He could, frankly, you know, slap the Valencia manager. It wouldn't excuse it. And I do think that it's very telling that, you know, looking at the minutes after the racial abuse happened in extra time, and Vinicius somehow carried on, somehow remained on the pitch, and we saw Vinicius get put in a headlock by Hugo Lloro. He responded by slapping him, and it's Vinicius who got sent off.
I know, this is what I don't understand.
That's exactly what La Liga's problem is. So La Liga and Spanish society has a massive racism issue. And I do think that what we've seen with the higher ups in La Liga is that they are really comfortable as the neutrals. They're comfortable staying on the sidelines. And the thing is, in 2023, if you aren't combating racism, then I'm sorry, but you're just as bad as the racist. If you're not taking a stand, then you're just as bad as the racist fans. It's not enough to not be racist. You have to be anti-racist. And frankly, from what we've seen from La Liga, it shows that they truly do not care. So I just think it's just despicable that so many fans have said, oh, well, you know, Eduardo Camavinga, Aurelien Tchouaméni, they're humble, they're hardworking, they don't get racially abused. Guess what? I mean, there are plenty of white players who can be, you know, provocative, who can be just as, shall we say, riling up the gears of these opponents, of these opposing fans like Vinicius. They don't suffer anywhere near the amount of abuse. And I just think that if I was a black player or a black fan, I don't know why I would go anywhere near this league. But I will say this. I think that one thing that needs to change in this fight against racism, and of course, there's so many things, but one thing is this cannot be just a black problem. You know, this has to be a problem for everyone. White people, Asian people, they need to take a stand and say, you know what, as long as I'm seeing my black brothers getting racially abused and being, you know, harassed and suffering mentally from this consistent harassment, then I'm not going to watch this league. And yeah, to be quite frank, I mean, I know that me stopping my watching of La Liga, which I've been following for over a decade at this point, it's not going to make that much of a difference. But I do think that if we have a organized effort with fans, with sponsors, this can seriously make an impact in
life. 100%.
When you hurt their wallets, that's when we're going to finally start to see in action. We're going to finally start to see some serious action being taken. So I just think it's completely abhorrent, and it breaks my heart that Vinicius, you know, somebody who has reached the pinnacle of football at 22, who has succeeded at the biggest club in world football, is seriously considering leaving Real Madrid. It just breaks my heart. And I think that, yeah, I mean, the response cannot be, which I'm seeing from so many people, like, the response cannot be, oh, Vinicius, that sucks. Come over to Liverpool. Come over to Manchester City. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you are not helping whatsoever. That is the most ridiculous response. Because although England, you know, it's clear that the Premier League hasn't had as many issues of racial abuse, it still exists. It still exists in the Premier League, in the Championship, you know, throughout the pyramid. This needs to change throughout the entire footballing world. And the only way it's going to change is if we start to implement some serious consequences, which, frankly, we just haven't seen enough of. So, yeah, it's just, frankly, despicable. It's made me not want to watch another La Liga match ever again until we finally start to see some wholesale changes. And yeah, it's definitely put a ugly taste in my mouth. It's just heartbreaking to see Vinicius consistently abused. This is something that happens every day. But you know what? Javier Tebas is going to end up on the wrong side of history. Vinicius is going to end up on the right side of history. And what we're seeing right now is a player who, you know, has suffered all this racial abuse and yet is not backing down. If anything, he's standing up. He's taking to social media. He's using his platform. And we're talking about not just a very good young player. We're talking about one of the best players in football. We're talking about one of the most marketable players in world football. People in Canada, people in Indonesia, people in Nigeria, they know who Vinicius is. He has a massive, massive platform. And what he's doing is essentially stating, you know what, I don't mind if I suffer more from this. Because it's clear that, the more times that he tries to take a stand, the more he's going to make himself a potential target. So what he's essentially doing is, I'm going to be a martyr. I'm going to take all of this abuse in the hope that, you know, the next generation, the generation after
that. Yeah, Zach, we've been saying that for hundreds of years, man.
And I just think that's beautiful. So, look, this is what we're talking about is a player who has just, for me, just gained so much more of my respect than I already had. He's somebody who yeah, is has definitely stated that I'm not going to stick to sports. He's somebody who has definitely shown that he's going to stand up for not just himself, but all of the black players, whether they're from Brazil, whether they're from France. And yeah, he's stated in his social media posts that the image that Spain is getting in Brazil is that of a racist country. And that's the case, not just in Brazil, but a lot of other countries, and rightfully so. So yeah, I would just close out by referencing the tattoo that Vinicius has on his arm. En cuanto acuerda Phil, por más importante que os olhos que o brilho dos olhos, haverá guerra. While the color of the skin is more important than the shine of the eyes, there will be war. So I just think that's a beautiful quote. And I just hope that I hope that there can be some wholesale changes. And if not, I do hope that La Liga suffers the consequences. Because right now, I will be honest, I think that La Liga has certainly suffered a gradual decline in recent years. We've seen that with their underwhelming performances in European competition. You know, only one Spanish team in a European final this year. We've seen that with a lot of stars such as Neymar, Cristiano, and Messi leaving. But I think that there's a good chance of us seeing a more drastic decline. I do think that La Liga's inaction on racism, if it continues, could definitely be the league's downfall.
Zach, here's the thing, Matt, and I'll finish on this. The only way to really change this is to educate, because if you police language, and it should be policed inside the stadium, absolutely, and there should be sanctions for racism, and there should be sanctions from La Liga and from UEFA. But that just means that the racism will take place outside of the stadium. It's a bit like telling your kids they can't curse in the house. Once you're not around, then they will use the language that they get punished for using in front of you. The only way to really change that, and we see this in lots of different countries, once a demagogue comes along and says it's okay to say this and say that, and there is no social consequence for saying this and saying that, then people, bigotry and hatred resurface. When you change attitudes, then you don't have to worry about this anymore, because people understand why it's completely unacceptable. And what's happening inside these stadiums is being brought into these stadiums from the Spanish towns and cities that these people are growing up in, are living in. They're not becoming a 90-minute bigot. They're bringing that attitude with them into a stadium that comes from the communities that they're growing up in. So there has to be a major systemic effort academically to change these attitudes, to educate, and then Vinicius and everyone else won't have to make sacrifices for the next generation, because the next generation won't experience it on the same level that they're experiencing right now. You will always have prejudiced idiots. You'll always have 1, 2, 3 people that will be racist. You'll never get away from that. But what we have to create is an environment where someone doesn't feel the courage to be able to say that in a group without experiencing some type of retribution or some type of response. If I'm, for example, sitting in Real Madrid's Bernabeu Stadium, I would understand that I probably shouldn't get up and cheer for Barcelona here, because the rest of the group inside the stadium will not respond well to that. That's what we need. We need an environment where someone says, I want to be a racist here, but I probably shouldn't, because it's going to produce a reaction around me that I'm not going to like. The fact that people don't feel that is an indication that that is normalized throughout society, and that is a really serious concern, because that is a much more deeper issue and much harder to address with just sanctions, but sanctions most definitely need to happen. Let's hope UEFA also shows some teeth here. Ivan Toney got banned in England for 6 months for betting. These are the types of bans that need to be handed down. The clubs to players who do it or anyone else. And you're quite right, it's not just a black problem. Okay.
I think it was 8 months now.
What's that?
I think it was 8 months now.
Was it 8 months? I thought it was six.
I believe he's suspended until January, from what I
heard. Maybe I'm not counting the summer.
Okay.
2 months because that's off. But yeah, 6 months of football, 8 months in general. Okay, let's move on, mate, to some other topics. Marcelo Bielsa, who's going to Uruguay. Maybe for a guy like Bielsa, coaching a team like Uruguay, where in a national team it's more of a coach than a manager, he's more suited. Depends on who you speak to, but lots of people see him as a pioneer. Great manager. Said something very interesting in his press conference, which I endorse wholeheartedly. And he said, you know, we are just the coaches, the journalists, what have you. We're just the people in between, the people that really matter, the fans and the players. This is what's beautiful about football. And we ruin it by taking a lot of the joy out of it, by making it solely about results, by everything is about winning. And you take the art out of it, you take the beauty out of it, and maybe if he was a kid, he wouldn't fall in love with football, which I totally understand that. If he was a kid today, maybe he wouldn't. But nonetheless, he's at a country, very, very strong country with deep football and culture, very, very good players. What do you think he brings to Uruguay?
Yeah, I think this is a great appointment. I'm a bit surprised that he decided to walk away from club football and return to international management. But I do think that, yeah, obviously he's had a lot of success at the international level. And I think, yeah, being able to go to a country like Uruguay, which is just a talent goldmine, I think that it's a really interesting move for him. Obviously, he's not as young as he once was, so maybe he wants a job where he's going to have more free time, going to be closer to his family in Argentina. And yeah, I think that Uruguay makes a lot of sense for a number of reasons. They're a country that, you know, it definitely looked like they were in danger of missing out on the World Cup. They sacked Oscar Tabárez and managed to turn around their form and get to the tournament via Diego Alonso, but quite frankly produced a really poor performance. For me, one of the most disappointing sides in Qatar. So it was clear that sticking with Alonso, it was something that was, you know, probably not going to get a lot of fans on board, given their underwhelming campaign. Yeah, the fact is we didn't see enough attacking play. We saw a conservative setup that a team that wasn't afraid to that was afraid to take risks. So I think that Bielsa definitely makes a lot of sense. And yeah, the fact is Uruguay are kind of at a crossroads at the moment. We're seeing a lot of these older players who've been so important, such as Luis Suarez, Diego Godin, Edinson Cavani, reaching the twilight of their careers, and there needs to be a changing of the guard. And I think that it's going to be hard for them to repeat the success of the past decade and a half, you know, getting to the World Cup semifinals and winning the Copa America. But I think that they have so much talent. Manuel Ugarte, one of the best players in Portugal this season, and I was absolutely shocked that he didn't have more of a role to play in the World Cup. I think that Ugarte will definitely flourish under under Bielsa's style of play. I think that other players such as Rodrigo Bentancur, Darwin Nunez, Facundo Pellistri, Matias Oliveira, there's a lot of
Federico Valverde,
Valverde so important for Real Madrid as of late. Ronald Araujo, one of the best center backs in Europe this season. There's a lot to like about this Uruguay team, and they're a country that just never seems to run out of talent. So I think that I'm very excited to see how this goes, because I like Bielsa a lot. He's somebody who, yeah, maybe the trophies and the silverware haven't quite corresponded to the level of manager that he is, but he's somebody whose style of football, you know, you can fall in love with. And it's clear that a lot of Leeds fans did fall in love with that. He really revolutionized that club. And I do think that he has the potential to revolutionize this Uruguay team, because as much competition as there is in South America, I do think that under Bielsa's reign, I think that Uruguay have a good chance of staking out that spot and becoming a consistent top three team in CONMEBOL. I think there's a lot to like in terms of their squad. A lot of promising players, such as Ugarte. Another Uruguayan player who has been really good is Ignacio de Arrua Barrena, who is the Arauca goalkeeper. Been very important in allowing Arauca to qualify for Europe in the second time in their history. And I think that he could be very well the long-term successor for Fernando Muslera in goal and stake out a starting spot between the sticks. So yeah, I think that there's a lot to like from this Uruguayan team. So many other talents that I have not mentioned, such as Nicolas de la Cruz, Lucas Torreira. But yeah, this is, I think this could very well be a match made in heaven.
We shall see, my friend. It's good to see him back, and I think it's a good place for him. I want to move this conversation on, because two parts left of this podcast I want to get to. Like I said, the Women's Champions League final, which we'll finish up on. But one of the discussions that have taken place this week, of course, is where does Pep Guardiola fall in the pantheon of greats? And I understand for a lot of people that are listening to this, don't really care what I have to say, because I'm predisposed to have maybe not the most charitable view of Pep Guardiola. What I would say is this: the football that Pep Guardiola teams play is undoubtedly incredible. Right? He is someone that clearly is an exceptional coach, right? And he is someone that, regardless of what happens off the field, is someone clearly that I always ask myself this question before I rate or don't rate someone as someone I would want at my football club 100%, right? Because he does things that are unconventional. He'll put a left back in midfield. He does things that lots of people don't see, that aren't obvious. And excuse me, I also think a lot of his influence is rubbed off on people like Mikel Arteta and Erik ten Hag, both of whom work for him, of course. So there is the undoubted caveat, however, that he could be on the verge of winning his third Champions League with two different teams, both of whom are under investigation for cheating. I would say Barcelona's is far worse than City, because I think there's a direct causal, easy causal relationship there between what Barcelona were doing on the pitch and having an impact in the results. City, on the other hand, is more of a technicality. This is about, you know, financially doping. There was a time in football when that would have been perfectly fine, and there were no rules preventing this. And in fact, it has been done many times in the past by benefactors. And I can understand City fans' arguments saying, you know, this is really a competitive barrier for growth, because it's preventing anyone from breaking into the elite number of clubs that have competitive advantage due to their size. I totally understand that. But it's not a victimless crime, because there's lots of clubs that have had to comply with FFP and how they construct their squads, one of them being Inter Milan, for example, that they play in the final, had to sell players. They comply with the FFP. They couldn't sign certain players that they wanted to comply with the FFP. And so you can argue for better rules, that's different, but what you can't argue is the right to ignore rules you don't like. You know, I remember in the early 90s, United getting beat 4-0 at Barcelona, primarily as a consequence of the three foreigner rule, which undoubtedly affected British clubs disproportionately because of obviously the makeup of their squads comprised of English, Scottish, Irish and Welsh players. So, to comply, that was the rules. So, do you think that given the fact that Barcelona and Manchester City are under investigation for technically cheating, it changes the perception of Pep Guardiola's previous success? Also, he was also accused of some stuff at the Bayern Munich doctor. Do you think that has any impact on how he should be perceived?
Yeah, I'll be honest, Phil. I would rather watch David De Gea try to complete a 25-yard pass than listen to you talk about Pep Guardiola, but I appreciate it.
Oh, you sound like a silly fan.
I appreciate the rare words of praise coming from you for Pep. And look, I think that he has to be considered in the pantheon of the greatest managers of all time. Obviously, you'd have likes of Sir Alex Ferguson, Carlo Ancelotti there, but I think that, yeah, Pep, his legacy, it speaks for itself. As you mentioned, he's a trailblazer who's influenced so many managers, such as Roberto De Zerbi, Eric Ten Hag, Mikel Arteta. I think that speaks volumes because he just has so much influence, so many top managers who have modeled their style after him. And yeah, he has had a fantastic managerial career. You look at starting off at Barcelona, you know, what he was able to do. And people forget that Barcelona, when he took charge of Barcelona, that was a team that I believe was closer to 11th place than first place. Okay, that Barcelona was not in a good state at the moment. They had just sacked Rijkaard. They had kind of, shall we say, they were looked at as what PSG is now, you know, a party club. And what Pep did was, you know, he made sure to get rid of Deco and Ronaldinho and a lot of big names, even though they were, you know, hits on the pitch, and prioritizing a lot of young players, such as, you know, Sergio Busquets, who had no experience whatsoever at the top level and became a key part in arguably the greatest midfield of all time. So that Barcelona team, I definitely think it was one of the best teams ever I've ever watched. The way they moved the ball, the way they just did things that were so unconventional, you know, using Lionel Messi in a false nine role. And that's just, I think it's a testament to Pep's ability as a manager to develop talent as well as get the most out of his players. And I think that with regards to City, I mean, it goes without saying that, yes, he has had an unfair advantage in working at a club that is effectively owned by a petrostate and that has had so much money to spend. And, of course, yes, the 115 charges do deserve mentions. I just think that we have to appreciate the fact that, you know, just spending money is not a complete guarantee for success.
Well, what would we say on that?
But what I will say, Phil, is that you know, a lot of these signings, Manuel Akanji, for example, £15 million. Your club, United, could have signed Akanji.
No, let me add this caveat, Zach, because this is important. When I say he has a competitive advantage, it's really important. A competitive advantage over who? Over mid-table teams and teams at the bottom of the table, essentially, right? Because there's nothing that City have done that has been beyond the financial reach of a club like United.
Yes.
Okay? So, really, what if I was a City fan, what I would argue is all that Abu Dhabi did was fund City to the same degree that your football club was funded. Your ineptitude is yours. Right, the fact that you couldn't run the football club in the same way that we run ours is your problem. But there's nothing that we have done that's beyond your reach. For example, United could have had Haaland for 4 million. They could have had a McGinn for 20 million. They do choose not to sign him. Then, and there's been so many times when United have got Van Persie, got Berbatov ahead of City. And so you could argue, you know, the competitive advantage over who?
Yep.
Not the top teams, because Real Madrid, you know, have won 14 European Cups, the same number of European Cups all of England combined. Apparently they're going for Jude Bellingham, Mbappe this summer, right? All these players. So competitive advantage over who? Really, a couple of clubs, you know, are teams in the, just I'd say the top four teams at the bottom, right? That's where their competitive advantage is. So, you know, I still think that, you know, I still think that not any manager could have went in and done what Guardiola did at City.
Yeah, you're completely right. I think that, look, if you give a different manager the caliber of players that he has, De Bruyne, Rodri, Haaland, you know, obviously Haaland only joined last summer, but do you win a title? Probably. Do you win 5 of the last 6? I'm not so sure. So, you know, there's definitely an interesting debate on what you would rather have between the Champions League and the league. I think that it's really hard to say. I think that the league is definitely more of a testament to a team's consistency and their just, you know, ability to keep up these performances throughout the season. And I think that's what is so good about City. They are a team that, quite frankly, don't get into poor runs of form. If they do draw, if they do lose, they're going to bounce back shortly after. And that speaks volumes about the standards that Pep has set, as well as the competition that he has in the squad. You know, he's been able to deal with the squad that, yes, has more talent on its bench than any team in world football. But that, quite frankly, you know, you look at the team, it actually isn't that big of a squad. You know, there aren't, it isn't a bloated squad like Chelsea, for example. And I think that's definitely a testament to what Pep has done. It's, you know, being able to get the most, keeping these players fresh and knowing that they can't slip up, whether that's in training or games. And yeah, understanding the standards that are at the club. I think another thing is he has definitely shown an ability to adapt.
I was going to say this, his adjustments, I think, have been really, really, like, if you look at City at the start of the season, they didn't look as great. He made adjustments, got rid of Cancelo, put Akanji at right back, put Ake at left back, and all of a sudden, after the World Cup, City became unstoppable.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for sure, there have been times where his adjustments have been to his detriment. We saw that a lot at Bayern when they reached the semifinals. We saw that, you know, with not playing a defensive midfielder, playing Gundogan as a defensive midfielder in the Champions League final. There have been a lot of cases where he's definitely overthought things. With that being said, you cannot deny that City's tremendous success and their, frankly, ruthless, unstoppable form since mid-February. I don't think they've lost a single game since, what, February 5th? You can't deny that that has been down to, in large part, Pep's adjustment. You know, and that's come with, I think getting essentially a back four of four center backs. You know, I can't remember the last time I saw that in football, having, you know, Akanji, Stones, Diaz, Ake. Of course, you have Kyle Walker, who's more of an actual right back. But I think that's been really interesting to see, because I think that this City team right now is perhaps the most anti-Pep team that I can remember.
Why is he a better manager than Ancelotti?
I never said he's a better manager. I just think...
Well, people call him the greatest ever. Carlo almost never gets even mentioned.
I think Pep's tactics, his ability to adjust, is a lot better than Ancelotti. I think that he's much better when it comes to winning the leagues. Of course, Ancelotti's legacy in the Champions League is far better than Guardiola.
So is Zidane's.
Okay, well, you're just throwing out these random names. I mean,
no, I'm just. But how do we define him? Do we define him by his influence on the game? Because then we can talk about Cruyff. Then we can talk about lots of managers that have had tremendous influence on trends. We just talked about one, Bielsa, who you quite rightly pointed out, you know, his trophy all hasn't matched his influence on the game, right?
Yeah.
So how do we rate them? Brian Clough took Nottingham Forest up from the second division, won back-to-back European Cups, had an inordinate influence on English football, was playing football on the ground before English football even knew there was a ground to play on, right? Yeah. Thought the game was played in the clouds. There's been lots of influential guys. Carlo Ancelotti, if we're judging people on their success, on the trophies that they win, then Pep Guardiola cannot be called the greatest of all time, right? He just can't. If we're judging him on influence on the game, then I don't know how you scale that, because there's lots of different managers. I think he's an exceptional manager, but I don't think we should be talking. This is a symptom of modern life.
You don't think he's one of the greatest managers of all time? I never.
I don't know yet.
I think that.
What if they lose the Inter Milan?
But look, unlike.
I guarantee you, Zach, if they lose the Inter Milan.
Simone Inzaghi, are you saying Simone Inzaghi is one of the greatest managers?
No. What I'm going to say to you is this, right? Because there's a serious recency bias in how we talk about these things. I had to listen to people say that Liverpool and Man City were the two best teams in the history of the Premier League. Now, Manchester United have finished above Liverpool for the third time in 5 years. And this is their glory period, right?
Yeah.
And United are apparently a mess. We're talking about the best team in the history of the Premier League here. Same two teams were beaten by Real Madrid in the Champions League run last season. Allegedly the best ever in the history of the Premier League. City haven't won a European Cup yet. And we're talking about them being the best ever. And it's going to eclipse certain travels. This is hyperbole that comes with the internet, where everything has to be clickbait. Everything has to be the best ever. Everything has to be the GOAT. Everything has to be... Listen, I don't know if he is, but for me, to be that, you have to do something that someone else hasn't done. And Pep Guardiola hasn't done that.
What is winning the Champions League have to do with being the greatest Premier League team of all time?
Well, I'm not one making these claims. Right, I mean, this is the hype machine that goes with the pundits get sucked into this nonsense, right? I mean, to me, how you scale achievement, you know, if you're managing Real Madrid with Galacticos, you win a European Cup. Is that a better achievement than, say, Leicester City winning the Premier League? I don't think so. I think if you pull off a miracle like winning the Premier League with Leicester City, which shouldn't be done, and I mean, everything's set up in modern football to make sure that doesn't happen, right? If you pull off something like me, anyone can pull off a miracle on ice one day, right? That's one miracle, right? But to pull off a miracle over 38 games, to me, that's the greatest sporting achievement in modern history that I can think of as an underdog, right? Up there, but bigger than Buster Douglas. I look at something like Leicester City have done and what Ranieri did, and that will eclipse to me any Champions League that Pep Guardiola wins with arguably the greatest club side in the history of the Champions League of Barcelona with unlimited resources at Manchester. It's still a great accomplishment, but to do it with Leicester, who almost got relegated the season before, mate, come on.
Yeah, but I mean, what I would say to that is, like, Leicester, what they did, that's greater than, for me at least, it's greater than Real Madrid winning three Champions Leagues in a row. That's greater than any Champions League.
Yes, but my point on that is they matched Liverpool's achievement. They weren't called the greatest of all time. Liverpool won one Premier League title in 30 years, and they were being called arguably the greatest Premier League team of all time. This is insanity, right? And we don't really know this until we look back.
Okay, but you cannot deny that Liverpool over the past 4 years prior to this season was up there with...
Oh, unbelievable. I think Klopp done an unbelievable job sticking toe-to-toe with City and being, like Gary Neville said, probably the only realistic challenger to them. But Zach, you know, that's great, but... And they've won a European Cup in that time. But again, to call them the best ever,
Yeah.
And that's the point that I'm challenging. You have to do something that other teams haven't done.
No, look, I agree. I think that Liverpool, they do deserve to be up there with one of the best because, I mean, they did get, I believe, what, the second highest points tally in the Premier League era. They were able to push City. You know, they were able to go the distance with City for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. Missed out on a quadruple last season, won the Champions League. You have to give Liverpool a lot of credit there. I'm not saying they're the greatest ever, but they're definitely up there.
I don't know if they're up there. What they did was very, very good, but up there, I don't know.
I think that if they're in a different era, I think they definitely have more.
Yeah, but that argument can be made. That's a subjective argument. I mean, if anyone was in a different era, you know, things would be different.
No, I agree. But look, what I will say is some people will never be satisfied with Pep Guardiola. I think that, you know, City could win, 2-0 in the FA Cup final and 3-0 in the Champions League final. And people would say, well, why didn't you beat them 5-0, you know?
But Zach said he has their own selves to blame for that. They could seek a quick resolution to these charges that are leveled against them. And if they have an abundance of exculpatory evidence, that's exactly what they should be doing. And as long as they drag this out 3-4 years, the stench of this is going to get... is going to attach themselves to this and to every single Pep Guardiola achievement. Whether he likes that or not, that's fact.
I agree, but my question is this. What culpability does Pep have in that? You know,
well,
the reason why they breached, why they had 115 charges against them?
Well, here's the thing. It's not necessarily what culpability Pep has, but it's like this. If we enter a race and I give you a skateboard, and someone else is in a Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
Should you be able to compete? I mean, at the end of the day, the tools at your disposal are going to determine your outcome. And here's the thing. When you are at a football club where you can afford to constantly get it wrong, where you can bought three defenders, didn't work, throw them out. But more the club operates like that because they have to have an adherence to financial responsibility. Now, again, I turned around and said what they did financially, at least what we know, there's been a lot of stuff that's been hidden off the books, but there's been other cases where that financial irregularities have been litigated, like Juventus, right? Look at the punishments handed out to them. Look at what happened to Rangers when they hid EBT payments to players, right? And didn't disclose them. Now, obviously, HMRC, the tax memo, often they got relegated in the third division, Zach, right? So, you know, this is whether Pep Guardiola likes this or not, you know, this is going to be a stench attached to City. And to me, it's not even the worst crime. The worst crime is, of course, the propinquity of their owners to human rights abuses, which is undeniable. Same with Newcastle. I wonder why Newcastle are in the Champions League this year. It's a complete mystery. But
I think that
that right. deserves to be covered.
Listen, this cannot be swept under the rug, okay? These 115 charges and just the way that City have kind of been able to cook the books and give them an unfair advantage and all these things, yeah, they do go against the sanctity of the game and they do need to be included in the story of City. You know, when the historians write about this era of dominance that quite frankly is unprecedented in a league that prides itself on competition, yes, of course, it needs to be mentioned. But it also needs to be mentioned that, frankly, they do not do this without Pep Guardiola. One of the
I agree. I completely agree.
At the helm. And, yeah, look, I agree. I think that if City somehow lose to Inter in Istanbul, it would be one of the most, for me, probably one of the biggest bottling one of the most disappointing performances, for sure, because, you know, you compare the teams. I'm struggling to think of a single Inter player who gets into City's team. Maybe Bastoni for Akanji or Ake, but...
Barella, maybe?
Barella, who does Barella get in for? Gundogan? I think Gundogan's a better player than Barella, personally. But he's definitely someone who would, you know, compete, who could play for a City team. There are a lot of players who I don't think would even get into the match day squad, who are starting for City, who are starting for Inter. So yes, when you look at the teams on paper, yeah, City do have a massive advantage. And of course, you just compare that how the two teams have gone about their business. Inter, they were able to win their first Scudetto in 11 years, and the response, they lost their manager, they lost their star right back, Achraf Hakimi, they lost their top scorer, Romelu Lukaku. They've had to deal with this, over the next few years. And
because they had to comply with the FFP.
Of course. And because of the fragile state of their ownership. And they've had to deal with a lot of this. I mean, they had their shirt sponsor, Digital Bits, the cryptocurrency firm, they had to remove it recently because they defaulted on the payments, essentially. So I believe they're out 25 million euros, if I'm not mistaken. These are all things that Inter have to deal with that City don't. City
exactly. And that matters.
They do have a crypto partner. They have a lot of partners. But the thing is, if a business deal does go awry, they still have that landing pad.
Zach, have you seen their sponsor, 8Bet?
Yeah, I haven't, but...
Okay, but Philippe Auclair done... Just look at Philippe Auclair's timeline on this. And the fact that one of the perks of advertising to come work for a company that clearly doesn't exist is there's no human trafficking, right? It's clearly not a real company. And let me ask you one final question on this. If Pep Guardiola had joined United instead of Mourinho, would United be in this position?
Wow, that is a great question.
Because I know the answer. The answer is no, because the ineptitude behind him would never have allowed him.
If we're talking about Pep joining, Pep joined. Pep joined City the same summer that Mourinho joined United. Right, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I think it was a year before.
Okay. It was around that same time. I think that Pep would have won a title by now. I think that we wouldn't be approaching 11 years without a Premier League title.
Exactly. Well, United wouldn't be where City are at. The point that I'm making is...
I mean...
What's behind him means, and how it's funded, it clearly has a relationship to success, but yes.
I completely agree. And look, I think that... that is the elephant in the room, right? For all of the poor recruitment, poor coaching choices, giving the keys to David Moyes after Sir Alex Ferguson's departure, all of these poor decisions have definitely resulted in negative consequences for United. But with that being said, when you are managing a club that is owned by something as toxic as the Glazer family, it's kind of like trying to ride a bike and there's a hole in your back wheel. It's like you're only going to get so far, And I don't think that it is a coincidence that while so many of their rivals have been able to go up another level, United have, quite frankly, stayed in the same position. Even with, getting in some good players, the fact is, there's still that dark cloud over them, the Glazers. So that needs to be the biggest priority for United. They need to rid themselves of the Glazers.
What's our priority? Let me finish up with you because I want to get you out of here. Women's Champions League final. Very, very, very happy to see the growth in the women's sports. Another sport that I love dearly is boxing. I watched an amazing fight this weekend, Katie Taylor and Chantelle Cameron in Dublin. Homecoming for Katie Taylor. Massive, massive support for her. Brilliant fight. Chantelle won the fight. And again, it's an example to football and many other sports, but how combat sports can be an example on how to promote women and promote them properly and show that there's real genuine appetite to see women compete at the very, very top when it's done properly. Just some stats on this, that the Blast Barcelona played Wolfsburg in Eindhoven June 3rd. Holland, of course, hosted the Euros in 2017. Wolfsburg beat Arsenal in a semi-final in a sellout at the Emirates, and Barcelona beat Chelsea. Five of the top 10 attendances have come this year. Average attendance is up by at least 2,000 in each of the games. We had a sold out Emirates at 60,000, and sold out New Camp at 72,000 for the semi-finals. And cumulative attendance for the Champions League is around 650,000 this year. The ladies will play out in a sold out stadium in Eindhoven. When we look at football, for all the potential for growth, I don't think there is any greater potential than there is in the women's game.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that it is definitely growing and spreading, and it's fantastic to see. I think that one thing that was not necessarily related to attendance, but that really speaks volumes about the way that the women's game is growing, is that recently when Barcelona's men's team and women's team won the league title, they decided to have a joint parade with the two teams together. And I think that was just so special. I think that we are starting to see, more male players, more fans of male football starting to take a genuine interest in the game. I know we've seen that a lot in Portugal, in their women's division. But yeah, it's definitely improved a lot in terms of the viewership, in terms of star power. And I think that, this upcoming World Cup has a lot of potential to spread that even further, because there are so many storylines. You know, are the U.S. going to go three in a row? Is there going to be another power like the Netherlands or Germany that pops up? But yeah, the Champions League has certainly been a success for them, and this should be a really interesting final between Barcelona and Wolfsburg, two teams who have had a lot of success as of late in the competition. And yeah, the tournament has kind of been dominated by Lyon in recent years. So to have two teams that, yes, have made it to the final, but who are definitely still trying to pave their way in football, I think that it's going to be really interesting to see. I know that Wolfsburg have won a few women's Champions Leagues already, as well as Barcelona. Barcelona, I believe, losing to Lyon in last year's final and winning the previous year. Yeah, it's great to see. And I think that we're seeing, like I said, a lot of fans who are, you know, who may have normally followed Arsenal's men's team or Chelsea's men's team, starting to take a genuine interest in their women's teams and supporting these players. It's fantastic. So I just think that everything about the women's game is improving at the moment, whether that's the commentary, whether that's tactics, whether that's just the mutual respect. It's great to see. And I do think that there is just so much potential for growth. I know that we're going to be covering the Women's World Cup on Breaking the Lines. And yeah, like I said, there's just so many fantastic players out there. And there's a tremendous quality of play that just keeps on growing. So yeah, this is going to be a fascinating final between Barca and Wolfsburg.
I know there's some obvious aspects to this about how important it is for girls and everything. But when you have daughters, you see it up close. And when in my household, you know, football, me and my two sons are football mad, right? And I remember saying to my daughter, "Do you want to play?" And her response to me, of 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And the 6-year-old said to me, "I don't want to play, only boys play football." And I realized they'd never actually shown her girls playing football. And when I showed her girls playing football, it was like a light switch going off inside her head. She eyes got big, and she was glued to it. Representation matters, you know. Whether you're, whatever you are, you know, this is what's one thing that I think Disney gets right. And it, you know, has diversity in its characters, because when you're someone who looks just like that, and you see somebody up there doing something that you can all of a sudden feel like you feel empowered, you feel like I can do this. You know, when you're watching somebody that you can't relate to, that doesn't have your shared experience, it's very difficult to convince yourself that that's a obtainable goal. My daughters, one is very girly and one is very tomboy. And it turned out that the one that was very girly is the better athlete. It was amazing to me how that inspired her. She just finished her first football soccer season, which undoubtedly happened as a result of being able to see girls on TV play football. It gave her the confidence that she could do that. And for me, I want the same opportunities for my daughters that I want for my son. I want my daughters to have the same dream. I don't want them to say, well, as a girl, as far as I can go is college, you know, or some rec team. My boys can have a dream of playing in the Premier League or wherever. Whether it's obtainable or not, it's not the point. So now my girls can have a dream. Maybe they can play in the Champions League final, they can play in an FA Cup final, they can play in a World Cup. All the same things that boys should have and the boys have. And I have to say, it's actually a really brilliant spectacle. And once you get over your cynicism and watch it properly from an appreciative perspective. And out here in America, as you know, women play football voraciously just as much as boys do. And you go watch a women's football game, even at youth level here, it's extremely competitive, very, very, very good. And I think it's great to see these opportunities present themselves for young girls. So I'm looking forward to actually watching this Champions League final with my daughters. So we will go ahead and leave it there, mate. We'll be back again next week. We'll see if we can grab a couple of guests for you this week. I'm working on that as we speak. We'll be back again next week. The end of the season will have happened in Germany. We'll find out who the Bundesliga champions are. Hopefully it's Dortmund. And of course they got a big win this weekend, and of course the Premier League will finish as well, with most of that foregone conclusion with the exception of relegation and other leagues. So we will get into those. Mate, take it easy. Cheers, Zach. Cheers, folks.